Oh, we need a board first, okay. David Seid, planning and development, Parks and Nature.
Amy Arnold, the office assistant for Parks and Nature. Teresa Meyer, board.
Jenna Hay with community planning.
Jenny Coker, deputy director of public works.
Eric Christensen, program coordinator, public works, parks.
Ross Hoover, Parks and Nature.
Russell Walbert.
In the audience.
In the audience for now, but is on the agenda for tonight, or he's not speaking. His name is on the agenda.
Now you guys.
Jessica Bark still board?
I guess Don Meeks.
Board.
So.
This is going pretty.
Amy, can you introduce yourself, Amy Koski?
I think Amy stepped out. She is with someone else.
Oh.
Amy is in the room.
In the room.
And Danielle might not be there.
Danielle, can you introduce yourself?
Okay, we know.
Yeah.
Jordan?
Are we unmuted or something?
We're not muting them, so.
Hi, Jordan Heeman.
Thanks, Jordan. And Kelsey?
Kelsey Hewalt, and I'm with the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee.
Thanks, Kelsey. Thank you.
Okay, let's review previous minutes. Everyone have the minutes in their packet?
There's a small typo to the August minutes, which I will fix. I put pump truck instead of pump track, so I'll get that.
Thank you, Amy. Any other adjustments, edits, changes that need to be made? Bring those forth.
Make a motion to approve all 3 months of minutes for all three packages of minutes. As presented.
I second that motion. All in favor?
All in favor.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
And motion passed. Motion passed.
Hi, Brandon.
Hello.
Got a packet right there.
Thank you so much.
Okay, next item is public comment.
Join us.
Do we have any public comments tonight?
None that I received.
Anyone in the room or online that would like to make the public comment? Okay. We're on to manager's report. So up first is David Stipe. David Stipe's going to give us an update on our current projects in execution phase.
Lots going on. If we get to the end of projects and get things buttoned up before the rainy season. So I'm just going to go through some of the major maintenance project highlights. So the turf at the Jensen Field, which we were successful having council make an adjustment to our 2025 budget. And that project will be started today or tomorrow. I believe they're staging. They'll be removing the turf on field one, which is the soccer baseball field in the northeast corner of the property. That should be a 4-week-ish process. And so Justin's been working closely with Eric on communicating with our partners and whatnot. That would be a really great improvement to the park. Those fields are about 12 years old, 15 years old. That's about the shelf life for sports turf. We did, as a reminder, we did field 4 last year. So we just opened bids today for all of the roofs at Louisville Regional Park that are not cedar shakes, and there's more than you would think. And the way the bid was structured is We sort of had a base bid and then a bunch of alternates, additive items, and we're going to be able to afford to replace all of the roofs at Lewisville that have basically asphalt shingles, like you would see on a residential structure, and it's, you know, it's over a dozen buildings, which is great. Long overdue in a lot of cases. Just had a bid opening for tree services at Hazelville Community Park. They call it Canopy Health Project, deadwood pruning, canopy lit work. In anticipation of work we're going to be doing out there for public access improvements and some preparation work at Anderson. We call it Anderson Dairy. It's just an undeveloped property, but it's not the big Anderson Dairy. Also, I reminded that it's confusing. So it's a 10-acre parcel out east. And that project is about 27 trees, I think, removals. A lot of fruit trees that we don't have the capacity to maintain to pass, unfortunately. We will also be tearing down a couple of structures out there for the end of the year. We have a couple more bids that get through before the end of the year. One of them is demolition of almost everything at Prairie Field, which is that the management relationship with the operator, and then Anderson, as I mentioned. We ordered a big playground shade structure for Bosco Farms Community Park, our neighborhood park. It'll be the second playground that we've provided shade on in the last couple of years. It's freestanding shade sails. They look like canvas, but really they're plastic, vinyl plastic. So we have one that's Sifton Community Park that was like last year, the shade attached to the structure. This one's freestanding. So we're sort of trying out a couple of different shade strategies. You probably all realize that we repaved the Philida parking lot, the primary parking lot, resurfaced all the trails out there. And did some miscellaneous concrete work out there to improve access.
It's very nice.
I think it turned out really good. It looks fantastic. It's way better than trying to seal the pavement. And it just, we're in a bidding environment right now where we can do things like that, which is nice. Really nice to say that we're in a bidding environment where we can do things like that. Because 2 years ago, we weren't. Stewardship Capital, we're actually putting out, we actually have a big packet out to do a cricket practice pitch at Philida Community Park. It'll be our first cricket facility. We've been talking to the cricketing community since I've been here. And so we'll be doing that into the fall and the spring. Harmony Sports Complex parking lot close to completion. They started actually planting the trees today in that 200 car parking lot. And I anticipate there'll be a signal at 13th and 192nd, which will control the ingress and egress of the property. I anticipate that signal will be done before the end of the month. The equipment is supposed to arrive this week. There were some nuisance things that needed to be done out at Hawkinson. If you recall, we put in a disc golf course and put in a bridge and a 1 mile trail last year. But we went ahead and upgraded part of that trail to gravel from wood chips, and that work is really close to completion. The big project at Curtin Creek, we're just humming right along. I know it doesn't seem like it at times, but they're getting ready to install the artist sculpture, which will start tomorrow. I believe paving is sort of the parking lot is in the next several days. Hopefully we can beat the weather. All of the playground equipment is finally on site, and so we can really sort of push that toward completion. We're working through some issues with the court surfacing to make sure that it drains properly, which is not uncommon for sport courts. Not our capital project, but a big project that's on our property, Heritage Farm Wetland. All of the grading is complete. The seeding has been done. It is remarkably different than it used to be because it was just Cougar Creek was just a ditch. And now it is this giant habitat corridor in the property. We got our first test on the drainage, and we're working through a couple of drainage right now to make some final improvements out there. And the planting for that will start, I believe it has to wait till November 1st, but it's all habitat planting. ADA transition plan, we started that work about a month and a half ago, and the site assessment work is about a third of the way complete. So we have like 96 developed properties, and they've been to about 33, 35 of them at this point. The consultant, we hired a consultant, and they'll provide us with a barriers report at every one of our properties, which is long overdue. I think we were supposed to have that complete in the 90s. Like most agencies who were tasked with doing it when the legislation was passed, it's just a really overwhelming thing to try and wrap your brain around. So it's great that we're doing that. And then we go to council for our work session for the 26-31 capital plan.
So all of the projects that David reviewed were part of our 25 capital plan, and that you all reviewed, and the 26 that you have already reviewed. And so hearing through the commitment to make improvements at our sites, make sure that they're more accessible, make sure we're caring for what we have, adding to our system things like Kirk Creek, and ensuring that our spaces are healthy places to be, that we're creating climate resilient spaces, adding shades and shade sails and water features and throughout our system. And so, yeah, just
all of that couldn't be accomplished without my five team members in planning and development and cooperation from our operations folks. And so when I started here almost 4 years ago, I couldn't come here and say that we got even a fraction of this done, because we just didn't have the ability. And so this is really cool. I know you guys don't think it's cool, because I think we get a lot of stuff done. So
I have one observation to share. So Philida Park is such an amazing facility. It's almost a victim of its success. I've noticed parking is becoming an issue for the neighborhood. And I don't think the parking that we have is enough. And so I see people spilling onto the streets, and then neighbors are starting to notice. And I see like traffic cones being set up in front of neighbors' homes. Mm-hmm. I think there's some tension starting to brew there.
Yeah,
between park users and the neighbors.
I agree, Brandon. The biggest challenge we've had there this summer is that apartment complex, that senior housing. There are days where there's 30 cars in our parking lot that are not.
Yeah,
and I've had several conversations with the superintendent over there, and I threatened to tow. And took pictures one day, and it got better, and then it just, everybody just sort of backslide, and they don't have any space on their site,
right?
And so they've been using our park.
Are they using it on the weekends?
At this point they may be there on the weekends. I don't know for sure.
I suspect it's people that visit them, because there is insufficient parking there, most likely.
Yeah.
For the residents, much less the visitors. Yeah. My son and his wife live off of El Monica, in Hillsboro. They're in a complex, and there is no parking for visitors. So when we go to visit, we go visit those people that live there. We're directed to a little tiny area in the mass transit area. And if you stay in between the two cones, life is good. You park one cone out and you get a warning.
Yeah.
But where are you supposed to park to visit?
That's a great question. We can put let's put a pin in this topic and remember this topic, because next year we're starting the process of updating, reinventing really our system plan, our park system plan.
Yeah.
And some of the key questions we need to ask through that process are, how are people using our site? Are our sites overwhelmed? How do we accommodate for users? Things like that. So let's bring this up when we get into that conversation.
And deal with the policies on growth.
Correct.
Cars haven't gone away yet, and yet older people especially have people coming to visit them and help them. Physical therapy, elder care, all of that, and they have to have a place to park.
That apartment complex is under construction. So,
But it will probably become a problem because there is a gate for people that pass from the park into their facility.
Right, that's why I was asking about the weekend, because the weekend is when there's like literally a dozen soccer games going on at the same time. And I didn't see construction parking on the weekend, but yet there's enough activity from just park use that it's bleeding into the streets.
So it's a really good point, really good question. I would put that in the category of how we manage our use of our parks. Some of our parks are not directly managed by the county. We have an operator, and some of them we manage ourselves. And so I would love for that to be part of this system-wide considerations and thinking through how we engage with nonprofit organizations that are operating our facilities currently.
I know we have a great question, but that park was never intended to be used the way it's being used. So there's a land use issue associated with having, there's one formal field there, and the rest has been sort of over time sort of
appropriate
adopted by
an amazing facility, and it facilitates the activities perfectly. It's just there's nowhere to park, and it's creating some tension with the neighbors.
Completely agree.
I have a quick question on the Anderson Camps and Farm 10-acre parcel. Have they started taking those old trees out?
No.
Is it conceivable that someone could notify the master gardeners and tell them that that's going to happen so they can go grab some...
They could glean, for sure.
Yeah, grab some twigs, if you will, and for grafting, et cetera.
It's conceivable, yeah. I mean, we can reach out to the master gardener down at Heritage Farm and see if they want to go over and see if there's any species or varieties that are of that
heritage type.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Any other thoughts, comments for David?
Yeah, the issue of parking is a greater conversation, and it may require a deep dive, because if you just look around anywhere in Vancouver, parking's an issue, right? We just changed the fee structure for the weekend parking, say at the fair, the farmers market, for example. Now we're charging, and Portland's changing it. I think it's a region-wide problem, and we don't really have a parking problem. We have a walking problem. I get it when they're elderly and they have people visiting, but all of our parks, when there are community parks, aren't designed to host visitors from outside the community. Hence, there's no parking, right? And I hear it all the time. It's always parking's always an issue, just like communications. I can never communicate with anybody, and I can never park close. And I would ask you this question, Ross, is how much have we spent on expanding parking facilities or parking lots, if you will, in the last 5 years throughout the county? And I bet you it's in the million. I know it's in the millions. We've done expansive projects to increase the number of parking spots at a lot of our parks.
Okay, looking forward to that future conversation within the system plan context. Next topic is regional parks funding task team update. So you've received an update as to the process for the regional parks funding conversation at probably, I don't know, last 5 or 6 meetings. That this week is the week that we are bringing that group together for the first time. So Thursday afternoon, evening, 11 elected official present from every city and the county, along with staff members, where we will really an orientation introductory meeting to talk about the process, talk about our frequency of meetings and the logistics details. We'll then subsequent meetings will then dive into and understand the data in each city and the current condition of our city park systems and our county park system. From that, the next phase will be to look at other models. How have other regions filled their funding gaps operationally and from a capital side of the budget? And so we'll look at different models and case studies. The counselors will then use both the city and county park data and the model comparisons, and they will digest all of that, debate, have robust conversations around what could be a potential pathway forward for funding throughout the county for parks. So we're looking forward to those conversations, and we'll provide updates following each meeting. And some of you have read the article for that regional parks funding task team was discussed. And so we are not unique. We are a rapidly growing area within the state, and the funding sources that exist currently were not built for a really rapidly growing area. And so we'll learn from other more urbanized areas in the country and figure out how they close their gaps in the face of rapid growth.
Could I ask, when you're in that meeting, could you quote the prospect and just kind of take the temperature on the straw poll about the prospect of a regional park system? If we're going to fund it regionally, we talked about this before, you know, does it make sense to have all these individual parks and have overlapping regions?
So we will absolutely give a case study and a model for that type of a method of management. The most prominent on the West Coast is East Bay Regional Parks, where you have a number of cities and unincorporated areas that joined together many years ago to form a parks district. And so it's a separate municipal entity. And those also exist in Washington State. Parks Tacoma is probably the most prominent in the state of Washington. In the state of Oregon, Tualatin and Hills Park District is similar to that. Both much smaller than East Bay Regional Parks. And so we'll dive into that, and I fully expect that to be discussed. That'll be one of the models we look at.
Curious to see if there's any, like, what the smaller cities say to that. They have any objections to it.
Yes, it'll be a great conversation. Looking forward to that next step in the process. Under unfinished business, we are happy to be coming back to you following, was that last month, Jenny?
That's last month.
Jenny Coker presented and we discussed the fee update. And so since then, we have brought the first step at the council meeting today, where council took action and unanimously approved your recommendation. And so we are here today. Jenny's got a PowerPoint deck we will walk through. We want to talk specifically about the next steps in this process. And that is, what do the 3 days look like? What are the options for 3 days? So we'll walk through that now and have a good conversation and opportunity to vote on which of the three options we're presenting today would you like to see in place for next year.
Are you able to get that up from the meeting minutes? I actually didn't coordinate with you.
I'm like, oh no,
absolutely. Oh,
I know. I have no idea.
Your packet?
Does everyone have their packet?
Yeah.
Okay. That was a miss on my part. I thought we'd just throw the notes up. So does everybody have their packet? Those people online too? Yep. We can just walk through this, but Ross and I did just come from the meeting and they did pass the regional park fees. I just can't say how much I appreciate this board convening. We were very clear in our work session. We did say you did approve the recommendations with comments. And it was interesting that council also shared your view that there is room in the fees for increases, but they recognized fee increases are difficult and we want the change to be modest and we showed the plan. So again, just the background slide just talks about that. We did include, and that was a suggestion from the meeting on September 10th, the inclusion of annual passes at libraries to increase equitable access. And so if you recall, we proposed 12 free access days similar to Washington State Parks. And curiously, council had some opinions about that. They said, you know, why don't you choose 12 different days? We would like to see as many free days as possible within the Clark County area. And so that was their directive. No overlap with Washington State Park days, 12 different days, days throughout the months and seasons, and certainly a mix of weekend and weekdays because people work different schedules. So if we go to the proposed new program, this just shows the Washington free pass days and the Discovery Pass free days. I'll just go through them. There's two in January, First Hikes, Martin Luther King, 2 days in March, Billy Frank Jr., who was a, as I recall or understand, a Native American fishing activist, State Parks Birthday, Earth Day, a free fishing weekend in June, Juneteenth, Smokey Birthday's Birthday, National Public Lands Day, love this, October 10th, World Mental Health Day, and then November 11th, Veterans Day. So the rules given to us are don't choose any of those days. So Eric and I and Kaylee worked and looked at a whole bunch. I'm sure you've seen these. So let's move forward. Option one, it's in orange. This is a family and heritage focus. So none of the options show days in January because Washington State Parks had two. But this one, these are fairly evenly spaced throughout the year in terms of national holidays. We have President's Day as well as Labor Day, and we also in October have Indigenous Peoples Day. Our team really liked the idea of November 27th, which is the day after Thanksgiving, also known as Black Friday. There is a movement for people not to go to shops and buy things really cheap and do your shopping, but to actually get into nature. So we thought Green Friday, walk off the turkey or whatever you eat. Father's Day happens to be on the summer solstice, and so we thought, how about two solstice days with nature? And then we said family because there's a theme of Mother's Day, Father's Day, and Grandparents' Day that runs through this, just to kind of reflect this is a very family-focused area. And then we've got International Day of Forests. I know I'm jumping around. National Picnic Day in April. This was Rasa's idea. There are a lot of days. There's a National Kissing Day, but I was told no. So I was like, send people to parks for dates. I know.
Right. You find your reason, there's a date.
There's a National Dog Day, but I heard there were rules against dogs. We do have a National Bee Day because we are focusing on the importance of pollinators. So we can also see a lot of programming around some of these. So this is option one. Option two is green, family and environmental awareness focus. Again, you're gonna see no days in January, fairly evenly distributed. This time we have the inclusion of Memorial Day to honor our veterans and fallen soldiers. We really liked that. I will point out that Eric has costed these days. Every single one of these options falls within the threshold of what we have budgeted. Memorial Day is our highest use day. But we have no problem with that. I just wanted to point that out. So maybe this time I'll go from the top. President's Day. In March, we chose World Water Day, just to kind of highlight our natural streams and lakes. April 24th, Arbor Day. We can do programming again, trees and woods. We also have the inclusion of Mother's Day, Father's Day, Grandparents' Day. You see the two solstices, Memorial Day. And then in the summer, you'll see World Environment Day in June, which is a Friday, Father's Day, which is a Sunday, National Wildlife Day in July, Indigenous Peoples Day in October, and again, Green Friday, winter solstice. So some slight differences, the main one, inclusion of Memorial Day. And then option three, nature, wellness, and community focus. This time we have some fun ones. This is probably the most evenly distributed and has the most number of weekend days, Saturdays and Sundays. We'll just start at the top. We have a fun one, Groundhog Day in February, March 30th, Walk in the Park Day, April 24th, Arbor Day, 9th of Saturday, National Bird Day. May 17th, there's a Kids to Parks Day. We like that. Summer Solstice, National Wildlife Day, July 11th, which is a Saturday. Relaxation Day in August, Labor Day. Again, another big holiday. So in this case, we have Labor Day, not Memorial Day. October 17th, Take a Hike Day. Again, Green Friday. And then December 5th is Volunteer Day. And we do a lot of volunteer events in the parks, so we thought that could be a nice way to bring the community together. Those are the 3 days. They all meet our budget. They're similarities, but
we get to vote.
You get to vote today. We did have voting, so. I know there's some folks online, so what we would do is have you email your vote. We want this to be silenced to Amy, and she'll have them. We have votes here, but I thought we'd just open the floor to see what you thought, if anyone had strong impressions, if some stood out more than another.
I think that not everyone pick and choose which one you wanted. You obviously hadn't heard of all these days.
Well, sure.
What was I doing on this day? It was, relaxing. I can tell you that it wasn't. I guess it's to each his own. I mean, like, I don't have any grandparents alive, so Grandparents' Day is not that important to me. I'm not a grandparent. So, but that's just me. I mean, there's a lot of people that are very happy. Grandparents love to take their grandkids out. I mean, that's a big thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I assume so.
So, you know, all three of them would be great. What do you think, right?
Well, the engineer side of me would craft a fourth option that picks and chooses. But
I was just waiting for it. All right.
I said, sure. Put B-Day in there instead of something else. You know,
I was prepared for this.
But if we're going to work within the framework of these three options, I probably opt for an option that actually has fewer of the large holidays. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, if I know that Labor Day, for example, is one of these 3 days, I'm definitely not going to it. It's just going to be so crowded. Mm-hmm. So I would probably opt for one of these options that minimizes those types of holidays as one of the 3 days and try to push activity and visitation to other dates and maybe spread out usage a little bit. And as I look through this, I actually think option three, each one has one of the major holidays, but maybe
option three only has one.
Yeah, option three only has one.
Yeah, that you have three.
Yeah. If I were to create an option four, I'd swap out Labor Day and one other, and then bring Father's Day and Mother's Day into option four.
You mean option three?
If I was gonna craft an option four, I'm saying I would get rid of Labor Day and get rid of maybe one other day that we could discuss, and then and it's in the place of those two, bring in Father's Day and Mother's Day. I think those are nice days to.
All three options, right?
No, they're not. So in the third one, Father's Day happens to be the same day as the summer solstice, so that is indirectly in there.
Well. I mean, I would probably vote as written. I'd probably go for option three just because it minimizes the willing day holidays.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, option three has the most number of weekend days. So I would look to the board to decide who is going to need to use this the most. People on fixed incomes, people on low incomes. Like, when do they work? Do they work? When do they want to get here? Summers, when kids aren't in school.
My take on it, with all due respect. Mm-hmm. Is one with one of the, I would pick one with the most federal holidays, because those are the days that people who are working in retail or any sort of public service, and that's our huge economy is based on that these days, some of their places of work are closed on those days, so they actually get a day off to go do something fun. But yeah, it could be busy. But if you're a teller at a bank, the bank's closed. Yay, you get a day off, but you don't have to vacuum or whatever, you know? So that was my gut reaction was, let's count the federal holidays. Now, the people that don't get many days off, when can they do it? Well, yeah. They get those days off anyway, sometimes, but not the grocery stores.
My observation is that federal holidays, other than Christmas, New Year's Day, are the only days you can count on that are going to be closed everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, some sort, you know, like some stores are closed on Thanksgiving and stuff. The mall's open.
Yeah.
The grocery stores are open. I don't think that's it. You know, I worked in an industry where you worked every holiday. I didn't have a New Year's Eve off from the age of 21 until I was 52.
Hallelujah.
Looks like Jessica has her hand up. And then Dawn.
These are great. And I don't think we should try to reinvent them. I'm sure you put a lot of time and effort into these. This is really difficult. I like the idea of having more weekends and the holidays. And there's a mix here, and I really appreciate option two with Indigenous Peoples Day. I think that's really important. But you also have the more, you know, well-known President's Day and Memorial Day and just sort of fun things that we've let go, I think, in our culture. Arbor Day doesn't get a lot of play anymore. You know, it's not one of our big hitting. So I feel that you've done a really great job creating different scenarios. And I think people will use the free days because they're free, regardless of which ones. I like the options in two.
Don?
I'm going to echo Jessica's sentiment. Love the fact that you put these together. I'm sure a lot of work went into it. Just some questions. Would it be the same year to year, or would we exercise this process again next year for 27?
It's a really good question, because some of these days move around and...
Yep.
I think my recommendation is we give ourselves leeway. Eric has done calculations looking back the last 2 years, but I think we're going to have a process to look back at the end of 26 to see what days were used. You know, were some days too many people at parks? Maybe get some feedback and talk to people. Do we need more days?
Yeah, there's got to be a feedback mechanism so you can make those, do that analysis.
Eventually, I do think we should settle on similar days, maybe that are observed, you know, on a Saturday instead of a Thursday, but mostly looking the same would be my recommendation.
Yep, I like it. I like it a lot, because parks will adjust their days as well. And then a question / comment, and then my vote is, the silent voting in the board does not bode well with me. I would adamantly disagree that we would do any kind of voting in private like that, because we follow Robert's rules. We approve the minutes in public. We vote other measures in public, and we agree that if we have an opinion, it should be respected, and we should be able to have a discourse and agree or disagree with it. But we're a public entity. And doing things in private is not really good for the public at large. And therefore, I would definitely vote for option three.
Well, I'll vote for option three also.
I see Amy tallying over there.
Oh, yeah. It was like
three. Three was already my earlier vote as well.
I think the point made about national holidays, nobody gets them off, but the banks. So I will still vote for the environmental awareness one, because to me that's the biggest bang for emphasizing Arbor Day and Water Day and Wildlife Day. You know, if they're all in here, okay, Arbor Day and Wildlife. I'd go with three too. As long as we really do our best to emphasize the environment, because that's part of parks, is emphasizing the environment. I'll go with three as well.
I will go with them all. They're fantastic. They're free.
Yeah, three.
Yeah, let's get them.
Let's just give the park system away.
Outreach is going to be the key. How is the public going to be made aware of it?
Well, it's a really excellent point, and why this has been such an expedited process. When numbers started coming in with the budget, we decided we were going to get this at the council, and it's been just 2 months. That's all. But so much had gone in previously. So if we've made a decision today, it does give our community engagement and inclusion team time to package this and market this and be ready to put this out. Well, we have the vote today on Regional Park, just the administrative rules of the Greater Clarks Park District means we have to notice in the public hearings for those corresponding votes happen on December 2nd. So assuming council does approve these similar fees, our team is ready to market this starting in December, and the sales will start December 8th, because my understanding is 10% of our annual park sales happen in December. There's a big push with the holidays. And also, it does give us a little bit of time because we don't have any of these free days in January. But yeah, it's going to be, I think, a really fun problem. Has everybody voted, or do we need to call an official vote? I really appreciate it.
No idea, but everybody has voted. All the Parks Advisory Board members have voted.
Yes,
and then we had a two, and then, oh, I could go with three.
Right. Right.
I will vote for three. Very dependent. That makes four out of four voting for three. Because there's only four of us here.
Yeah, that's
four out of five. Yeah.
Oh.
Brandon, Don, Jessica, Teresa.
Yeah. Sorry, Jessica.
So
she voted. Yeah.
I mean, technically, three was voted for by everyone.
Four and a third.
Yeah. Yes. That's the way to count.
Jessica voted for all three.
Great. Option
three.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you.
And for those of you who don't know, Eric and his team are responsible for booking all of our picnic shelters, overseeing our parking event rentals, our ball field rentals, our parking fees. And so he's been absolutely invaluable and just a key to this process. Thank you, Eric.
I have a question about park fees. Since in the past I haven't bought an annual pass, because I just, when I use something, there's so few parks that actually had a fee. So are the annual passes like January to December, or are they when you start? I start in June, it goes to next June.
We typically put them on sale the first or second Tuesday of December.
Okay.
And then they're valid through the following calendar year. So if you were to buy one this December, right, it would be valid through December 31st.
Okay. If I bought one in March, it's still just good to December.
Correct.
Got it.
That's
2026.
Yeah.
Which is different than the state.
Yeah, it is not. Well, I think what you're asking, is it a rolling pass? Is it a rolling 12 months? It is not. It is for the calendar year of 2026 plus this coming this summer.
Are you thought about doing a lifetime one? I could do like the Golden Eagle pass, but you pay more. And just curious.
I have not. That's a great idea. I would just defer to, you know, people who make those decisions in the right regard.
I think these are great ideas. And to your point, we do need to incrementally raise fees, but we need to do that in a balanced fashion that allows an increase in access. And the process to get these fees through does take some time. So I think Q1 of next year is the perfect time to relook at these, you know, maybe look at a weekend rate for the picnic shelters. Okay. Which other parks would make sense? I know we're looking at modernizing and putting some fee kiosks in, and then we did receive a comment today, I believe, from Councillor Little talking about, are there discounted passes? How would those come in? And, you know, it'll be good to discuss these, look at other recommendations, and then certainly it's going to be really interesting to see where the numbers come in at the end of this year. But I feel really good about this.
And the annual park fees, I mean, sorry, the annual pass, it used to pay for itself with 10 park visits, and now it's a little more economical. It pays for itself in 8. So,
I know. All the time.
I watched the video of the presentation that was made, I guess, what, several weeks ago. And I just wanted to commend you guys. It was very well done. That you guys presented very well. It's easy to follow. And kudos to you guys. You seem very, very well prepared. As I was watching the council's reaction, and it seemed like they were able to follow and understand easily the great presentation. So thank you. And I also recognize that you guys brought up that you were representing the input of this board, which I also appreciate.
This board's absolutely crucial. Key steps of this board. Thank you.
We tried. We put acknowledgments at the end too. I don't know if people saw that in the presentation.
Well, but I mean, the biggest comment was it was a really good presentation.
Well, the data came from this man.
Okay, next agenda item is new business, and this is an information sharing item. So we have 4 positions that are going to be vacant at the end of this year on our Parks Advisory Board. So of the 7, 4 are vacant. We have 2 members who are stepping off the board, who have not reapplied to be on the board. And we have 2 members who have reapplied to be on the board. And we received 2 new applications. Those applicants were interviewed. And of those 2 applicants, the recommendation and the any 2 existing members who reapplied, the recommendation is to fill the 4 vacant positions with Jim, who's not here tonight, who you all know, Janice, who's here tonight, Russell Malberg, who's here tonight, who's one of our new applicants, and Jordan Hammond, who's here tonight online.
Was
here. So the terms of those positions will begin on January 1st. Amy, talk about process here. Do we need an official vote from PAB to accept that recommendation? No. Okay. So beginning January 1, we will welcome Jordan and Russell to our advisory board.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm stepping off, so I don't have any reason to ask a question. But the problem, how we got this kind of problem to begin with, 4 people coming off, is that, you know, the staggered lengths of service. So are all 4 of these people going to have a 3-year term? No. Okay.
Great call. I'm glad you brought it up, Teresa. Yeah. So you might recall last year the bylaws were updated, and that was one of the updates we made. We now have staggered positions. That so that we don't have 4 coming off of the board at the same time in the future.
But their terms,
correct,
were for 3 years.
Sure. Yeah, the terms
to be for 3 years.
So some of the positions
are long.
Yes,
it's gone through the cycle.
Correct, and so it'll correct after a full cycle. Yeah, and as always, and what we've communicated with our two new incoming members is that this is a volunteer role. And so you commit a lot of time and energy to this. And if at any time the term or your personal obligations get in the way of serving on this board, you can resign from the board during your term if need be, and we can seek applicants for those positions that are vacant.
I just want to applaud staff, and that doesn't include me, for getting this done so quick. And it's like amazing how fast that the process went this time.
Yeah, Amy Arnold did a fantastic job organizing the process, setting up interviews.
I suspected it. I didn't want to I didn't want you to go.
It was Amy. And Jessica. Jessica and John wanted to recognize Jessica and John, who were the interviewers on our panel.
That's great. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. So fast.
And
I think we had like 7 meetings when we were here.
And to Teresa and Don, who are stepping off, we still get you for a few more months here. So you don't get to leave just yet. But so appreciate your time and commitment to this group.
Been a pleasure. When will the last board be for me? Will that be December? Because November's board is on the 11th. Well, scheduled. Did we adjust that for November?
Yeah, we'll need to. Yeah.
I don't remember. It's in here.
We will meet in December. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. And then I'll hold my comments and my farewells till then. My hugs.
Tears. Yeah.
Tears.
Virtual tears. Maybe there's an emoji for that.
There is an emoji for tears. Yeah.
The next item on our agenda is an informational item. We are grateful to be joined by Amy Koski and Jenna Kay. They're going to talk today about the climate project and what the county is doing in terms of ensuring compliance with House Bill 1181 and the changes, the legislative changes that are now requirements for our county.
Thank you for having us. Again, my name is Jenna Kay. I'm a land use planner in the community planning department here at the county. So I do long range land use planning. And I'm joined by Amy Koski. Amy works in the public health department and is the built environment coordinator there. For this climate project, I've been serving as the project manager for trying to implement this new legislation. And luckily, we got some help from the public health team. Amy's been working with me on the project management team. So we're going to give you all a brief update on what's been going on. And I'm glad to take questions at the end. Okay. So, we're going to start with just giving you a little bit of background on the climate project we've been working on. We're going to review just some key definitions and data, mostly just to make sure you know these things exist and where you can find them if you wanted to revisit them at some point in the future. We'll talk about some policies that are going to be proposed to council, and then we'll wrap up with just where we are in the process, what's next, and then glad to answer any questions that you have. Okay, so let's jump into the background. Okay, so House Bill 1181, or HB 1181, was signed into law in 2023. This legislation added a new climate change and resiliency goal to the state's Growth Management Act. This is the major land use planning law in the state of Washington. And with the addition of this new goal, the law requires that the county add a climate element, or you can think of that as a chapter, to our comprehensive plan. And this element has to address resilience as well as reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The legislation also has a lot of some other themes throughout it, including the need to address environmental justice and develop policies that benefit those in our community who are more vulnerable to climate impacts. And there are requirements about using best available science in our work. And the legislation also requires the State Department of Commerce to provide guidance to local jurisdictions. So they're the agency who we go to for technical assistance with our work. And we have a mandatory due date to address this legislation in our comp plan by the end of the year. Okay, so just a little bit more about what that all means, what we have to do. So for the resilience part of our work, we, the county has to identify goals, policies, and programs that the county will pursue over the next 20 years that identify, protect, and enhance natural areas to climate impacts, identify, protect, and enhance community resiliency. So that includes social, economic, and built environment factors consistent with environmental justice. And we have to do this work addressing natural hazards that are created or aggravated by climate change. And we have to prioritize actions that are benefiting overburdened communities who will disproportionately suffer from compounding environmental impacts and natural hazards due to climate change. Okay, so that's the resilience side. And then on the greenhouse gas emission reduction side of things, we similarly need to come up with a list of actions the county is going to take over the next 20 years that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles traveled per person on average without increasing emissions elsewhere in the state. And again, these actions have to prioritize reductions that benefit overburdened communities to maximize the co-benefits of reduced air pollution and environmental justice. Okay, so that's like the basic requirements in this law. So a little bit about our approach to doing this. We have five key phases of work that we have been working through that started out with just an exploration of climate impacts in Clark County. So looking at projections data for this particular area. We then use that as the basis to develop and draft resilience policies. We then looked at the results from the county's first greenhouse gas emissions inventory to inform some a draft policy list on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Then we did a lot of review and refinement to come up with a final list of policies. And then these will go into the adoption process then go before the Planning Commission, and then ultimately the County Council will be voting on these. So you can see the star on the slide. That is where we are right now. So we have the draft proposed policies ready to go, but the adoption process has not started yet. Okay, for the next slide. So as we work through that timeline, we did quite a bit of community engagement. So in addition to facilitating community-wide engagement events, we worked with three advisory groups. So providing links on the slide if you're curious and want to learn more and on what each of these groups did. But just at a high level, we had a community advisory group. This was 20 people appointed by the county manager who represented a really wide range of interests in the county. So from people working in building and development to people representing environmental and natural resource interests to people representing youth and education interests. And that group was tasked with using a consensus-based approach to make policy recommendations consistent with this new legislation. We also worked with an environmental justice coalition. So this was a group of 15 community-based organizations, and we organizations to help us with our community engagement. All these organizations are serving overburdened community members, and they helped us collect feedback throughout the project to help inform the policy list. And this group also helped us apply an equity lens to the proposed policies. And then we had a partner agency team, which was really our technical review team, made up of county staff from various departments. David helped answer questions that I had for him occasionally. So across departments, partner agency staff as well, and providing technical review and feedback as needed. So there's a lot of people were involved in getting to the proposed recommendations. Okay, so that's a little, the initial backdrop on what we did and how we did it. I'm gonna just shift now and again share some new definitions that have been written into state law and some of the, just a high level overview of some of the data that's applicable here to the county. Again, sharing, I think some of this is probably more relevant to parks than others. So, you know, you can look at it with your parks hat on as we look at this. The next slide. So, in terms of resilience, the state legislation has a definition of what we mean by that. So, that's the definition we are using. And when we talk about climate resilience, we're talking about the ongoing process of anticipating, preparing for, and adapting to changes in climate and minimizing negative impacts to our natural systems, infrastructure, and communities. That's the definition, but I think it's important to dig into the, what do we mean when we talk about changes in climate when we're talking about planning for it? So if we look at projections for the county in a sort of business as usual situation, we can see that the county is projected to have more hot days, more likely summer drought, more high fire danger days, more days with smoky air, more extreme precipitation events, more frequent and severe flooding along certain rivers and streams, and more likely landslides in certain places. So when we're talking about a changing climate and building resilience, we're talking about specific natural hazard, you know, frequency and patterns here in the county. Okay, so when it comes to planning for resilience, you know, we're not planning the change to hazards. We can't control how many hot days we have here in the county. What we are planning for are the impacts related to these hazards. So for instance, if we're expecting more hot days, how do we have better options to cool down, to have shade? I think we'll talk about shade structures, right? How do we plan to help keep our community safer and cooler when it is hot? There's a document linked to the in the slide where you can see a big summary of impacts that we are anticipating here in the county. We did just pull out a handful of them that seemed like they intersected parks and put them on the slide. So just looking at the first item there, you know, we are anticipating more destruction and damage to things in the county, which would include parks and outdoor recreation areas. So that's the kind of thing we want to be anticipating and planning for because it is likely to happen. Okay, so the next slide. So I'm going to switch back to greenhouse gas emissions really quick. Again, we have definitions for this from the state. So when we're talking about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, we're talking about actions taken to reduce or eliminate the emissions of greenhouse gases present and future to reduce the rate and extent of climate damage. So that's the definition we are working with. And we go to the next slide. We conducted a greenhouse gas emissions inventory, which is essentially an accounting exercise to track the sources of emissions here in the county. It gives us something to measure against in the future. And this slide is just a snapshot of the results of that data. It's based on data from 2022. And these are the locally produced emissions, so from activities happening within our county boundaries, plus the sources of our electricity, which may be outside of the county boundary. Our focus for our greenhouse gas work is we are supposed to align with the statewide goal and get our emissions to net zero by the year 2050. So that is sort of the overarching goal of this work. I'll flag when thinking about parks. Two things on this slide I'll just call out. One is transportation is one of our highest sources of emissions. So I think there is a role for active transportation that perhaps the parks work intersects. And then also the third highest source of emissions comes from the agriculture, forestry, and land use category. And the majority of that has to do with tree loss. So again, parks is one of many places in the county where there are trees involved. So maybe an opportunity to help there as well. Okay, there's a lot. We have a full report on this if anyone's interested, but I just wanted to make sure you knew that was available. And then I mentioned earlier that there's this new emphasis on environmental justice in this law. And again, we got some new definitions added to state law defining what we mean by vulnerable populations and overburdened communities. So you can see those definitions up there on the slide right now. So again, these are when we say vulnerable populations in our climate work, we're using these definitions to define what that means. Okay. So this is something we had to keep in mind throughout our work. And one of the ways we did that is we developed an equity and environmental justice lens that we use to help screen and review draft policies as part of this work. Okay, so that's just a lot of, here's some additional information if of interest. But let's then sort of shift gears to what is being proposed based on all of this work. The next slide. So, we have a draft policy list that has 32 goals and over 100 policies in it. This slide shows the like main topic of those 32 goals. I apologize, it's a little hard to see, so I'm gonna highlight things that are on the slide. We were trying to get it in one slide, but that's on the store. So we organized the goals into 7 categories, and I think I'll read through just all of them because I think the parks intersection shows up actually in several different places in here. So we have a health and well-being category. So that's where we have policies on a just transition, advancing environmental justice, ensuring the most vulnerable communities don't bear disproportionate impacts, consultation with the Cowlitz Indian Tribe, regional tribal governments, and culturally specific groups, food economies, agriculture and landscaping, housing, air quality, outdoor recreation. In our green job category, we have policies on economic development and job generation. In our ecological stewardship category, we have policies related to trees, county plantings and green spaces, environmentally critical areas and open space, forestry, salmon, water resources, stormwater, and public education on environmental topics. We have a transportation and land use category where we have policies on reducing vehicle miles traveled, around county vehicles, electric vehicles, resilience of the transportation system, and resilient development. We have a buildings and energy category with policies on energy efficient buildings, clean, renewable, and diverse building energy options, emissions from county buildings and facilities, and green building and sustainable building practices. We have a waste management category with policies related to waste reduction, composting, and recycling, policies related to emissions from county purchases, and using less and supporting maintenance, repair, and a resale economy. And then finally, we have a county governance category with policies related to policy implementation and resilience of county operations. So hopefully that gives you a flavor of the what policies are addressing within this proposal. But the exact policy language, it is online. We did pull out a few examples that we can share briefly. So I'm not going to read all the text. I apologize on each of these slides. But Amy and I identified just a few of the goals in this policy list that we thought had an intersection with parks. So the first one on this list has to do with connecting outdoor recreation to public health. So that's one example. The next one on this slide talks about protecting and planting more trees. So that's another example. Over to the next slide. We have another example on enhancing county-owned plantings and green spaces, some policies on sustainable forestry practices, and then the third one on the slide is around improving public awareness on environmental topics. And then on the next slide, just a few more examples, again, on identifying, protecting, preserving, and rewilding various environments in the county. And then we have one around managing parks and open space, consistent with protecting water quality, critical areas, and so forth. So those are there for you to read on your own time. And this is just, these are just a handful. There's a lot more, but I think these all had some intersection with parks in some way. Okay, so we're going to wrap up and just look at what's next. So we're going to show the timeline again. So we are at the point where we have a proposed recommendation. It hasn't gone through the official adoption process yet. That is scheduled to happen in 2026. The adoption process for these climate policies is tied to the whole county comprehensive plan update. So we're waiting on the rest of the project to be ready for adoption, and then it'll move forward as part of that. The Planning Commission and County Council will hold hearings before voting on this. So any individual or county board that is interested in participating, you're welcome to submit comments or provide testimony at those hearings if that's of interest. All right, so I'm gonna stop there. We're happy to take questions. Our project webpage, my contact information is up there if you want any more details in the future. Thank you again for having us.
Any thoughts, questions, feedback?
I appreciate the concentration on the native species, but with all due respect, the county is not superbly handling invasives, particularly noxious invasives, on county administered land. And the public needs to become more aware of that so they can do it in their own little backyards. So somehow, if that can be kind of brought back into awareness, it's expensive to manage weeds, especially on grand open spaces. But in some areas, they're flat taken over, and then you don't have much of a environmentally critical area anymore. You just have canary reed grass and thistle everywhere. Anyway, that would be just my. The natives are emphasized wonderfully, but noxious weeds are overlooked. Mm-hmm. And that's part of a healthy climate, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think, I think we have a couple policies that do name the invasive species as well in them, but good point, for sure. Yeah.
I have a question,
yeah.
And it may be a question that is better answered if I were to spend some time looking at the,
sure.
the sources of this, where this information came from. But
yeah.
I'll, since you're here, I'll ask.
Yeah.
So I found it very interesting to see land slides showing up on this.
Yeah.
and it says it looks like, if I'm interpreting this correctly, it's in response to anticipated increase in precipitation. And again, the source for this data came from me, the answer to my question. But are we talking about landslides that are potentially increasing because we look at anticipated precipitation, the general topography of Clark County, without consideration of where these landslides occur? Or are these landslides actually have impact on, if that question makes sense,
yeah.
So you know,
like the where and the yeah,
right? Because there's some landslides that like I don't think we really care, but there's others that we would.
Yeah. So we did look at, so it's a combination. I think there's what I recall from looking at the underlying data is, you know, we've mapped in the county sort of severe erosion hazard and landslide sort of susceptible areas in the county. So so part of this is just like those are still the high risk areas, but with increased precipitation, particularly in the over the winter, the likelihood of a landslide goes up. So and so a lot of that is in the east side of the county, largely away from where people live, but in our more mountainous areas. So that's sort of one bucket of that. And I think one of the other areas where we see this is like along streams, too, where it may not be a huge hill, but the erosion there is likely to increase if you have sort of more frequent flooding events, for instance, or things like that. So you also will see the those high erosion areas along a lot of the waterways in the county too. So I think those are the main areas. We don't, you know, where most people are living in the county, those aren't the high risk areas. But I'm not as familiar with like all of the parkland even in the county or trails, right? There could also be an impact on perhaps things.
And,
you know, some of the facilities
in
county too.
It's tangentially related.
Yeah,
I've been briefed on, they've looked at some of the dam failures on Swift Reservoir and others, and there are situations where that mass of water goes through and there's associated landslides, but not necessarily associated with increased precipitation, but a possibility or less.
Yeah.
And I think it's the increased the increase of a lot of rain in a very short period of time that increases the potential landslides. And so we do care about it where it's next to roads. Lewis River is a good example, going up, you know, to the park. There's slides on that road periodically. There's slides on up around the center where people do live. And I think those are the places we probably do care about where it could potentially impact travel safety, blah, blah. And if it's going to go downhill and block a river.
Yeah.
I will recall that the Snake River in Idaho was blocked by a landslide, almost rerouted the river. It was amazing. We all went out and watched. about day after day watching to see, and the river eventually worked its way around it and cut a little channel, and that was a huge river and a huge landslide, and that could have affected public safety there. There were people that were flooded.
Yeah,
so
historically at the Bridge of the Gods.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Landslide.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that there aren't landslides that are important. I'm just asking if there's a distinction that we can make between landslides that are important and those that are not, because I think there is a difference.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think any project the county is working on too, right? We're looking at, landslide areas are a critical area. We already have regulation around it and are trying to avoid, putting people and things in harm's way. But I think an awareness of where those high-risk areas are and avoiding as much as possible, putting anyone or any structure in harm's way is sort of the general thing. But I think landslides and flooding are very location-specific, in terms of where the risk is, where, I guess all of them have a certain degree of location, but those in particular, it's not necessarily everywhere in the county that is suddenly a landslide hazard.
It might not affect our parks as much, but it should be affecting this whole plan, where roads are allowed to be built, where houses are allowed to be built for the safety.
We have a lot of land along the Lewis River, and we're actively retreating with Daybreak Park. We've lost 40 or 50 feet of park to the river from erosion. It's just part of what we do, and site planning is important.
I just wanted to add to the conversation, because you said something that piqued my curiosity, is when you talked about erosion and bank erosion, that's part of the natural channel migration zone of streams. That's a different issue than landslides. Landslides has a direct connotation, and it's not only related to precipitation, but slope as well. And we've done that analysis in depth, and I have a background with DNR, and I think we spent an inordinate amount of time and energy studying where the potential risk for landslides are. It's also a component of vegetation and tree cover, et cetera, et cetera. And so that all has to be mentioned aside from the precipitation. I was also curious about the prediction that we would have 9 more additional red flag warning or wildfire danger days in 2050 as the prediction. What do we have now as the baseline? How many were there this last year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that number off the top of my head, but we could dig into the data to look at that.
Right. And I appreciate that, because what's important to me is telling me 9 additional days is not really a significant number. Not if we have 20 right now. And we would have a 30 or 40% increase. That's not significant. But knowing the baseline where we're looking at now and the additional days, that helps in your slide deck. It's like, here's where we're at in 2025. We're adding 9 more days, which is a 200% increase. I think that speaks greater volumes than the raw number. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
And then finally, I would ask our assistant public director's person. I know that we're harvesting in the county, and so as part of this plan, are we adjusting or rewriting our policy on our timber harvest within the county for county beneficiaries?
So that's me. I don't know if you can see me back here.
I can. That's why I asked you the question.
So our timber is managed by our lands department. I don't know if you're familiar with Kevin Tyler. And this
yes,
is something that will be folded into new sustainable forestry plan, something we're planning to kick off next year. And actually, we have a tour with council on Friday to look at some of our forestry lands. So it is something we are actively discussing.
Yeah. I was part of the team that certified the management plan 2 years ago, I believe, with Hunter, and I see that we're still cutting. And so that's important that for me, when I see this presentation and our commitment to the Climate Act and what we're supposed to be doing through RCW and legalities, is that we're not only we're propagating this as our policy, but we're actually living by it as well. I do think we have a sustainable harvest and that we're doing the right things. I just would like to see that, you know, if I'm going to tell people to do it, I should be doing it myself as well.
Absolutely crucial. And Don, I think I'll add to kind of, I mean, this work really vital countywide, specific to parks within our system plan, existing system plan. We have elements and goals that align with this work. But in our revised renewed system plan next year, we will really focus on climate mitigation and adaptation resiliency projects and focus on how those goals align with the countywide goals specific to parks. So I mentioned the shade sales in parks, access to water, access to areas that are cooler than urban centers. How we plant, how we steward our parks. There are a lot of specific goals and subsequent actions that we will be writing into that system plan update. I can tell you, so these projections in this document are projections, but I can tell you that we are seeing effects currently. And it's not just Clark County. This is global. And so for example, one of the species that is really struggling within our park system and others within the Pacific Northwest are Western Red Cedars.
Yeah.
They're really, you know that well at DNR.
I do that. I deal with it. I deal with it on a daily basis. I'm super uber familiar with that. And then the emerald ash borer as well and the decline there and, you know, the heat dome and the impacts to the Doug fir that we had a few years ago. I get it. And I see it regionally through from Skamania all the way out to Pacific and Wakayakan counties and, you know, in different geographies, specifically in the PNW that I get to see. It's super incredible because I can do a comparative analysis all the time. And, you know, I'm a little bit of a nerd, so I like to do that work. You know, and I know the invasive and the noxious weed struggles. And even as a state, we've got mixed guidance and we allow the counties to kind of run their own programs. And the state needs to get on board and get us all lined up on that. Some places we have to control tansy. Other places it's optional. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, tansy is a bad weed for everybody. So I
guess just to say with the effects, the projections we're looking at, our projections, but we are actually seeing it now. And so some areas are harder hit than the Pacific Northwest. I was in a conversation with folks from City of Phoenix Parks. They are actually in the process, park by park, systematically removing all of the native tree and plant species in their parks because they're all dying. And they're replacing all the species with species from Africa and South America. Right. They're in the process of that right now. So this is not some future projection, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so it's absolutely vital work that the state has identified through legislation that the county is in the process of adopting a plan for, and that we will get specific within our park system plan on this front as well.
Invite me back as a guest. I'd love to see it.
Awesome, Don.
I have one comment that I hope we're addressing in this chapter is the cost of construction, the environmental cost of construction. We put in a shelter a couple years ago, and it was driven here from Utah. It makes no sense to me. And it's part of that low bid environment issue that we struggle with. There's a shelter manufacturer in Roseburg, Oregon, and we specified that or approved equal, and because we have to do an approved equal, and a contractor found an acceptable equal that was in Utah. We can't write into code that it needs to be sourced within a certain number of miles. It's all about the dollar. And concrete has the highest environmental costs of any material that we use in our surfaces. There are urban concrete options there's low carbon concrete. And if we have the tools to be able to do those sorts of things and be able to afford to do those sorts of things, or at least have the option to do it and not just be relying entirely on lowest qualified bidder, it'd be fantastic.
So you always have to go with the lowest cost?
We have to go with the lowest qualified bidder.
So in the RFP, you can't write in a distance thing?
We would have a significant headwind to say we were going to source something within a certain number of miles. That would be a requirement right now. It's just not legal.
So these are really good real-world examples of the importance of policy development to guide procurement and guide other decisions we're making on a day-to-day basis. So that's the whole purpose behind a plan like this. And so it takes time.
Yeah.
Eventually we'll get well aligned with the planning documents that we're putting together.
Because your second biggest polluter is the building industry, right? It's cars, then the building industry. And part of the building industry's pollutants is delivery of materials. So it's just a really fascinating topic because there's just so much legislation that would have to go into place to sort of clean up that or free us up to do things that are sort of more environmentally responsible and maybe not the most fiscally responsible thing.
So I have a response to your point, which was really well taken. The county has a green purchasing policy, but there was a big climate for sustainability about 15 years ago. So we've been asked to update this policy. And because Public Works had the largest number of people, including parks, our noxious weed team, our pesticides, purchasing solid waste, we're kicking this off and we're examining these things because I think, as you can see, there's a lot of planning and policy work being done concurrently. And so to Ross's point, we're learning and trying to get in alignment with all this so we can consider this. This was something that was brought up with the artificial turf as well, because there's more climate friendly options, but they're more expensive. So again, how do we balance all these things?
Yep.
Where we invest.
Court infill, a lot more maintenance.
But yeah, we do have a lot of things started, and so we're going to get there.
Great.
Jenna, Amy, thank you. Appreciate you being here. Next item is roundtable discussion. So the floor is open to any member who has a topic, something they want to share, an exciting event or activity they're doing.
I have a comment. I really like the tour that we took. And I would like to see that happen more than once a year. I think if we did that twice a year, that would be appropriate. And I don't mind having that be in addition, not as a replacement for this meeting. If it had to be a replacement, then I still think that would be valuable. But I think it's good for us be in close proximity, physical proximity to the parts that we are here to discuss.
Yep.
And, we do individually get out there, but I think it was really good to be there as a group. And once a year just doesn't feel like enough.
Ross and I both talked about having an annual report, and it might be interesting to do sort of like a beginning of year, like tour as we're getting things sort of kicked off and going and visiting places. We're going to do this at this location. That'd be a lot of fun. And revisit those things at the end of the year.
I liked the ability this time when we went back and looked at projects we had already looked at to see the before and the wow, look, Curtain Creek is almost built.
Yeah.
That was, that was my favorite park.
Yeah.
I was at Moulton Falls this last week for last, I guess it was. And, the back trail that goes to the train station. I don't know how many people have done that hike. You can do a pretty big hike out there if you do the whole road that goes into it. Anyway, there used to be all these old, they were there, picnic tables. And they were picnic tables, I think from the 30s or something. They're just falling apart. And they're like, kind of creepy. Anyway, they're all gone. So,
Our maintenance team might have gone and removed them.
Well, they're good. I mean, good thing they couldn't sit on them.
Just like they were just, but it was so strange. You'd be hiking along, there'd be a pit table in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
And what's happening with the railroad back? They were getting ready for Christmas. They put up the Christmas Santa Claus thing and everything. Yeah. Anything new there? Railroad? That is out that ours, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? Yes.
It does.
Yeah. It's a land division.
They've done improvements there to go way to get on the train and stuff. Bathrooms are always clean there.
Yeah, there's a tour up north. There's an operator that does a tour up north.
Yeah, you get on and you call and then you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought it was interesting about the cables being gone. The low even out. And they're in the middle of the woods.
Huh. All right. Everybody, thank you so much. Meeting is adjourned. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, teammates. See you.
Bye, Don.
See ya.
I know. I read through all the people.